All right, I think we'll go. Is that working? I think we'll go ahead and get started. This is a panel on system science and the theory of system science. I'd like to acknowledge and thank Mike Bailey in the back of the room, whose idea it was to put this panel together so that we could talk about the theory of system science, and then after this panel, there'll be another one on the application of system science. And my name is Tom Valente. I'll be chairing this session. I'm going to provide just a quick background on what I think system science is and an example from the field of my own work on system science. And then we have three other presenters, Larry Green, Ken McElroy, and Janine Harris, who will also make presentations. We had a fifth person, Fran Stillman, who could not make the meeting, and so that presentation will not occur. Okay, so system science. My name is Tom Valente. I'm from the Keck School of Medicine at the University of Southern California. And as I said, we have three other presentations today, and Fran Stillman was going to be here. Then she was going to ask Carl Schmidt to come, and then Carl Schmidt couldn't come. So gives us all a few more minutes. Yeah, really. Okay. For me, system science really provides a conceptual framework that enables us to do real-world application and tests. And so I think, unlike some other conceptual frameworks and theoretical approaches, system science really is grounded in the notion that we're going to do empirical tests and get out into the field. So what is system science? Well, most people mark the beginning of system science as 1956. Jay Forrester from MIT sort of presented this idea that most social things can be thought of as systems, and they're going to be interrelated and interacting parts that we can treat as sort of an engineering problem and study how those interrelations work and complement and interact with one another. And the notion was to really make all of our assumptions about how things work and the processes through which things work explicit, so that we could test them, we could test their interconnectedness and their interdependence, and we can look specifically at feedback loops within the system to see how those feedback loops then have implications for how the systems evolve. And very critically, and this is something that I find very appealing about system science, is the notion that these systems, once we understand how they're interrelated and work, can be engineered and perhaps improved. So for me, and the reason that system science is appealing, is I do social network analysis. And social network analysis really is a way to make explicit the connections and interdependencies between different kinds of units. And those units and components interact with one another. And once we understand how they interact with one another, we can start thinking about ways to improve that network and make that network more efficient and look at the feedback loops and dynamics that occur within that network. So now I'm going to present an example of some research that we've been engaged in lately looking at connections. And I call this coalition connectedness. And it's a network approach to looking at the public health system. And this is a project that's called WinCART, Weaving an Islander Network for Cancer Awareness Research and Training. And this is a five-year effort to improve cancer awareness research and training for Pacific Islanders in Southern California. Sura Park Tangasiri at Cal State University Fullerton is the PI on this project. And we also work with a woman named Paula Palmer, who is now at Claremont Graduate University and the University of Southern California. And this project is funded by NCI. So here, the idea was to look at community and academic partnerships, and we're going to look at these partnerships to try to improve cancer outcomes along the cancer continuum, from awareness, education, knowledge, to screening, treatment, and hopefully better cancer outcomes. And the idea was that throughout Southern California, there are many university units that do a lot of work in cancer. University of California at Irvine, USC, UCLA, Fullerton, UC Riverside, and so on. And there are community-based organizations involved in outreach to Pacific Islander communities. So the notion was that we wanted to create better linkages between the Pacific Islander community, community-based organizations, and the academic institutions. This would help improve cancer outcomes for CBOs and their constituent populations, and it would also help academic institutions and researchers within academic institutions conduct better community-informed research. Now, the key notion, one of the key notions in network analysis, is this notion of homophily. And homophily is the tendency for individuals to associate with others like themselves. And we see this with young adolescents, for example, who are friends with other friends that are the same gender. Typically, people of particular ethnic backgrounds have friends that are also the same ethnic backgrounds. Socioeconomic status is an important influence on friendship and other network ties. So in public health, what we have is a lot of homophily along this characteristic of community-based organization versus university. And CBOs tend to have strong relationships with other CBOs, and university researchers obviously know other university researchers. So in our case, what we wanted to do was increase the heterophily that exists in this network so that CBOs would have better connections with universities and universities would have better connections with community-based organizations. And so here is just a simple graphic of what we wanted to see over time. In time one, we have a network that's very heavily clustered on this characteristic. On the left side, you have a bunch of organizations that are connected to one another. They're all squares. On the right side, a bunch of organizations that are all circles. And we hope to see a melding of those two subgroups over time. So this was a longitudinal study. We collected baseline data in June 2005. We collected our follow-up data in July 2007. We collected the data electronically by sending the survey to 121 individuals at 16 different organizations. We collected a sociometric survey in which we asked people to name the other organizations that they have collaborative relationships with. And we managed the 75% response rate. And we actually asked too many questions. This always happens. You go overboard. We want to know about everything that people might talk about. So we ask them about everything, which we probably didn't need to do, but we have lots of data now. At least one member from each of WinCart's 14 agencies and organizations completed the survey. And then at, we collected data again at Wave 2. We had 55 respondents at Time 2. We sent the survey out to 146 respondents and 16 organizations. And in addition to the 16 organizations that are formally part of the network, there are actually three other organizations, the American Cancer Society, the Cancer Information Service, and the Susan B. Komen Organization that individuals nominated as other organizations that they had relationships with. So then we classified all of these 19 organizations into three categories. They were either community-based organizations, university organizations, or they were national organizations and funders, those three at the top, ACS, CSI, CIS, and Komen. So unfortunately, our attrition rate was somewhat high, and then we've gone back down and dug into the data and discovered that a lot of people have left or changed organizations and so on. We had 36% of our baseline population complete the follow-up survey, but we still had people from all of the different organizations that we were interested in. It was just a fair amount of individual turnover. So even though there was a decrease in the number of respondents, there was actually an increase in the density of the networks. That is, we went from having 1,426 links at time one to 1,617 at time two. And although there's some changeover in the specific individuals that completed the survey, we have the same organizations participating in the survey at both time points, so we can still look at this as a panel data of surveying the same organizations at two points in time. So here is a picture of the network at time one. You can see UCLA, UCI, CSUF, USC, sort of at the center of that network. Those four academic organizations were most often named as other organizations that people go to learn about cancer research. That makes sense. When you're thinking about cancer research, you're going to nominate the universities. And then you can see some of the other organizations that participate in this network scattered around here. And you have a fairly dense and centralized sort of network. And then at time two, this is the cancer research network at time two. You can still see that the universities occupy sort of the center of the network. There's a little bit of change in the configuration of the network, and there's an increase in density, although that's not readily apparent by looking at the picture. So now, to give you an orientation, that network that I just showed you, really, here's an example of what these data look like. And I didn't put numbers in all of these cells. I just wanted to give you a sense that we have a network of 19 organizations, and it is represented by this matrix of how many different connections each organization has with another organization along all of these networks. And another way to think about that network is something called the block model. And now what I've done is I've ordered the networks by all of the community-based organizations are the top 11 rows and the first 11 columns. And that blue space really represents homogeneous ties between like organizations. So all in that blue space is community-based organizations linked to other community-based organizations, academic institutions linked to other academic institutions, and national ones linked to national ones. And then the red space is the heterophilous links, or the heterogeneous ones. So these are community-based organizations connecting to academic institutions. And as I said at the outset, what we want to do is we want to increase the rate of the orange to the blue, right? Easy enough. Easy peasy, lemon squeezy. So here are the percentages of links, and this is what we call sort of the block, the reduced block form of the network, and the percentage of links that you have between like-minded organizations or like-categorized organizations. So in this network of links, there's 33% of the possible links that could exist between community-based organizations are there. The overall density for the network is 29%. At time one. And then at time two, we see that that density went up to 43%, as I said earlier on. And then you can see the percentage of ties for the different blocks in the network. So for community-based organizations, of all the possible links between community-based organizations, 48% of them are there. Now we have a little trick in network analysis where we say, well, so what does this network really look like? And I can reduce that set of 19 by 19 organizations to really three different positions: community-based organizations, universities, and nationals. And I can, using that cutoff threshold of what the average is, 29% at time one and 43% at time two, I can posit whether or not there's a link between those organizations. And so you can see at time one, we had links of community-based organizations with other community-based organizations. Moving to time two, we still have lots of links from community-based organizations to themselves, but now we also have links from CBOs to universities, from universities to national, and from CBOs to national. So we've increased the density in the network, and now we've seen the change in the overall structural set of relationships between organizations. And you'll notice we don't have links from universities back to CBOs, right? So we've done a good job in the first 2 years of this project increasing CBOs' access to university researchers. We haven't been able to, Larry, you're not surprised by this, get university researchers to be more connected to the CBOs. They're very resistant to change, it turns out. If you want to do behavior change, don't work with academics. So then you ask the question, is this pattern statistically significant? And we can do a sort of simple sort of logistic model and test whether or not the links from CBOs to alters, being from CBOs to universities, is statistically significant. There's the model. You can see we get a statistically significant result. And so there's some notion that, well, maybe this is a real effect. And so the implications of this research and analysis are that the CBOs created links to university and national organizations, that our university researchers were not able to increase their connectedness to CBOs, and just as parenthetically, there might be an issue with some missing data that I need to do a little bit more statistical analysis on. And now what we're doing, now that we've discovered this finding, we are now making a concerted effort to get university researchers to link to CBOs in a more concerted way. And actually what I've done is I've gone through and I wrote a program to analyze the network and pull out from the network those links from researchers that if they were connected then to CBOs will increase the overall cohesion of the network most efficiently. So now we not only know that we want to connect researchers to CBOs, we know specifically which university researchers we want to connect to which CBOs to strengthen the network in the most efficient manner. And so that's where that notion of the system science saying, now that you know what the system is explicitly and how it interacts with one another, how can we try to re-engineer it to make it more efficient as a network to reach our cancer outcome and aims? Okay, so that's all I have, and then I'll just briefly introduce, who's next? Ken, are you next? Let me get us back to there. So Ken Mack.